Buongiorno everybody and welcome. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come here and run with me a lap around the Windows Azure Active Directory. My name is Vittorio Bertocci. As you can hear from my typical Texas drawl, I'm from Redmond. And I look after developer experience in the Windows Azure Active Directory team. But here, I'll take the tour from my day job, and I have the honor of being among the first to speak with you guys about this new offering, these new exciting extensions of our classic Azure, our classic, sorry, I'm still warming my English coprocessor, our offering of our Active Directory. What is Windows Azure Active Directory? Now, Active Directory is one of the most successful technology franchises on the planet. And it works great, and it has worked great for the past couple of decades. However, now there are a new breed of applications which is emerging as one predominant way of selling software, positioning software, deploying software, running software, which is what we generically call the cloud applications. And those applications have different requirements. Actually, the trick is that they have the same requirements as the old ones, but it just happens to be elsewhere. So Windows Azure Active Directory is an extension of the Active Directory that you already know and hopefully love for meeting the needs of the cloud applications. And this is actually part of our generic platform as a service initiative. This is not taking your existing Active Directory and running it on a virtual machine. That wouldn't really make it a service. That would make for a good collocation options, but that wouldn't really meet the requirements that you have when you're writing one application. That wouldn't be as easy to use. And we'll see what that means in details. Now, let's talk for a moment about what we are trying to solve. How many of you guys have been in this game for more than, say, 10 years? All right. More than 15 years. Excellent, the same guys. All right. So if you remember, like, early 90s or similar, the big thing was taking computers, more or less, in the same room and connecting them. At the time, it was still it was still an option, like, what do I use, a token ring, this other. And the big thing was, how do I make applications that are designed pretty much to be standalone and actually talk to each other? Or how do I take a group of people, my employees, and use these applications as, like, a seamless system of productivity? Well, that wasn't easy, because mostly every application had its own user store, and basically had no standard provisioning. You had to pretty much do everything by hand, but luckily, this new construct emerged, this idea of directory, and progressively, applications started to take advantage of that. And so a number of these problems, like everybody have its own username and password repositories, how to actually take into account of the presence of these things in the network, we provided a way of centralizing that, and also thanks to your hard work, this problem went away. Now enter the year 2010, 2011, 2012. And if you listen to the marketing of the various IT companies, the cloud is this huge thing that you can't do without. And in reality, there are actually a lot of advantages to that. Because basically, you just open a browser, you type an address, and voila, you get the functionality that you need, be it email, be it collaboration, and similar. And so now you have all these collection of cloud applications. However, now we are back at square one, because what happens? It happens that, yeah, that's true, there are things that you can solve, even if this application is running outside of your perimeter. You can do things like, anybody? Anybody? I have a book for you if you guess what you can do when stuff is out of your perimeter. Federation. Who said federation? Excellent. Thank you. You want a book. It's the only one I have, but there is the one book signing at MS Press. So if you show up, you'll probably get some other as well. So what happens is that we can do that. However, identity is more than just signing in. Typically, especially for applications that are user-centric, you need to do things like, I have this task, I have this document, and I want to assign it to somebody, or I want to limit access to a certain role, a certain group, and similar. And what happens today is that often, in these cloud-based solutions, they ask you interesting things like, why don't you every night upload in this FTP address the CSV of what changed in your list of users? Like, really? It's 2012. So basically, that's what you have to do because you don't have a counterpart of a directory. So we know very well this problem because we had to solve it ourselves for our own suite of productivity. So Microsoft, as you know, is not just a platform provider, but we do have our applications as well. How many of you guys are ever tested Office 365? Great. So Office 365 is actually a suite of applications that correspond to the ones that we see here. Those are cloud applications. And already in the BPOS times, we found ourselves with this problem. We have SharePoint on-premise, we have Exchange on-premise, and now we want to host it in the cloud. And by the way, the solution that we are using for running this today is the core of Windows Azure Active Directory. So Windows Azure Active Directory is not a science project that somebody had going to sleep after eating pizza and pepperoni. Don't go to sleep right away. It's hard to digest. This is not a science project. It is something which is being used by hundreds of thousands of organizations, which means millions of users. I let those numbers detonate in your brain for a few moments. Like, those are huge, huge numbers, and they're already working today. So here, I'm not talking about abstract stuff. I'm talking about a very concrete service. And basically, the problems that we had were the one that I mentioned earlier, how to deal with signing in. Well, federation, that's a good solution. However, both SharePoint and Exchange have a lot of situations in which you needed to go back to the directory and find out things about your users, like who your users are to begin with, which you don't get with federation. With federation, I just show up with my token, which describes myself. It doesn't tell you who my manager is, for example. Or, for example, like anything that you can think of that has to do with going back with a directory. So we had to solve this. And what became immediately clear is that if you wanted to run a service at scale, you really cannot afford the latency of going back on-premise. Even if you solve all the connectivity problems, like this thing is running in the cloud, your directory is behind the firewall, you've got to pierce a hole somewhere. But even if you do it, that's just too slow. You can't do it. And so basically, we had to project what you have on your local Active Directory and make it available directly in the cloud, so that applications can access the information that they need without paying the latency price that I was describing earlier. The other interesting thing is that, of course, what I just said assumes the existence of Active Directory on-premise. However, there's a number of companies that are actually not using any workload which would require you to use the traditional Active Directory. So let's say that you are like a modern startup in which somebody is working here in Europe, some other works in Australia, and you just come together and you collaborate online. But you don't really have like printers to manage or machines to join to the domain and similar. What you need is a place to put your users, to describe roles, to assign roles, to describe groups, and to have those information used when those guys collaborate, both using Office 365, but also using your own applications. In that case, you can use this projection without having the on-premise counterpart. So you could have a directory entirely in the cloud. And again, this proved to be very, very interesting. And in fact, we have a lot of sign-up for that. Now, the idea is that we did this effort for Office 365, and we are extending this to all of our cloud services. So you'll see progressively, as those services come online, that they will start taking advantage of Windows Azure Active Directory. And specifically, Intune, I believe we recently announced, and you'll see others, Windows Azure, other services that will come online and will take advantage of these. So that substantially, you'll be able to regulate access using roles. You'll be able to reflect from your organization the things that your employees can do with those services and similar. But beyond that, we also wanted to be able for you to buy applications from third-party ISVs and use this directory as part of that. Or if you write your own line of business applications and you want to host them in the cloud, you'd have the same problems that I described earlier. And by using Windows Azure Active Directory, you can substantially bypass all those issues and take advantage of that directly with your applications. That's quite a tall order, but I think you'll be satisfied with the results. Now, I said that this thing is a projection of a classic Active Directory. So it is not your Active Directory run in a VM. Now, that's not to say that that's not an interesting scenario. It is. And in fact, we have an entire session, I believe, from Sam. Is it Thursday? Well, and in the end of the slide, we have all the various sessions. So if you are interested in running your favorite application, just put it in a VM and host it in Windows Azure or wherever else you want, then you want the classic Active Directory. You want something that will just give you Kerberos as is. This is not what Windows Azure Active Directory is. It's tempting to make the comparison saying that Windows Azure Web Roles relation to the Windows Azure VMs in the same way in which Windows Azure Active Directory relates to Infrastructure as a Service Active Directory. It's not exactly the same, but might start to give you the idea. This thing is specifically for certain workloads, which is applications dealing with single sign-on and dealing with accessing information from the directory. This is not something that you use for managing your printers, for example. It lives at a different level of the ISO/OSI stack. So the relationship with a normal Active Directory is that if you have an existing directory and you want to take advantage of that from cloud services, what happens is that on one side, we enable single sign-on using federation. On the other, we enable accessing information by synchronizing selected information that you have on your local directory with this projection in the cloud. Today, this synchronization is one-directional. You just copy some of these things to the cloud on a regular basis. There is a daemon which runs on your service and does that. In the future, we'll consider doing this bidirectional, so that if you modify something in the cloud, this thing will be reflected on your local directory. But for the time being, that doesn't happen. One thing that we do not synchronize today is credentials. So you don't have to worry about your passwords being synchronized to the cloud, because we don't need to. We use federation. So every time we need to authenticate somebody, we go back to your local directory. That doesn't mean that we might not do this in the future. Like, we often get asked by people that are less concerned about security to have this, because it could be, of course, very very convenient. But we'll see. Like, this thing is in evolution. And of course, part of this is getting your feedback to understand what you really need. Now, let's talk a bit about the design. We already said that, and here let's start to do some movement. Here you have your user. We already said that in order to connect to your app, okay, I saw stuff moving there and I got worried. And so I go, what's happening in here? Maybe is the internet coming back? We'll discover that soon enough. So we have seen that in order to do this, you can do federation, and that works great. The part that we are unsure is how to make this thing happen. So let's go back through some of the mental process that we used for the designing the directory so that you'll understand why we have certain features and we don't have others. The first thing we have done was trying to understand what we are up to. Like we said that we have this directory. We understood the main thing, which is we needed to be able to access directory info from the cloud. But then we wanted to make sure that whatever we do is actually usable by the cloud applications. So we tried to understand what are the recurring patterns and how a typical cloud application looks like. And what we discovered is that there is no such a thing as typical cloud application. Well, not exactly. So basically, if you wanted to understand what a cloud application is, here are a few elements that you'll always find. For example, the classic way in which you expose a functionality for the cloud app is through web pages. It's just a collection of pages or directories, or as in IIS directories, things that are consumed by the browser, which promptly allowed on the other side. And then typically, there will be an account and profile store which leaves behind those pages and supports it, both for the pure authentication part, but also for the attributes. And increasingly so, you'll see that the capability of that application is also provided in form of API, so that third parties can integrate with that. And the third parties can integrate with that in mostly two ways. The most typical one is through mobile applications. You have phones, you have all sorts of devices, but of course, you also have other server applications. And with the server application, I don't necessarily mean the stuffy backend that you might find on, I don't know, classic bank, but pretty much anything. If you are familiar with the modern way in which the web operates, basically what happens is that websites can take advantage of other websites. Like, for example, if you have something that tracks your runs around, this application might tweet on your behalf saying, I just ran 70 kilometers and I survived, something like that. And that is actually a server application which happens to be talking to your services. And the mobile app pretty much uses the same services, whereas for the web browser, you just go these sites. And that's pretty much as much that can be said about cloud applications, because as soon as you try to go a bit more in details, you'll find that both on the client and on the service, there is an incredible, incredible variety of devices, platforms, languages, tools that you use for developing these applications, styles in which you deploy that, marketplaces where you are. It can go on and on and on. So the lesson for us was we need to define what is the maximum common denominator across all those to make sure that whatever we choose, whatever technology we want to rely on, will be available across all these consistently. Luckily, that wasn't especially hard. So let's go back to our design. So finally, I think that you have now all the elements laid out in front of you of what we had to solve with our design. This thing operates on very different requirements than what we had to deal with in the late 90s. In the late 90s, as I said, you had your local system. You had like your pond in which there would be this cathedral in the center of it, your domain controller. The domain controller would know everything about everybody. There would be nothing that is not accounted for. All the machines joined to the domains, all your users, everything would be tracked, and the access would be pretty much limited to people physically being able to access the directory, modulo VPNs, and similar. Now, fast forward in 2012, in which your potential user is anybody on the planet, apart from the people in this building, that have access on the internet. Everybody that have access to the internet is a potential user of your application. You have no idea which device we are going to use. You have no power over it. There is no group policy that you can unleash and fix things. It's a completely different world. So the first thing was the one about the application pattern that I just described. We absolutely needed to have a system that you can use with absolute minimal tools. We cannot ask people to support Kerberos or LDAP from their phone. We are lucky if they can actually connect to the internet and use HTTP. And actually, that's a good thing because we know that HTTP is pretty much available across the board. Pretty much any device that you can get your hands on will be able to just make a GET, to make a POST. And that's basically where we draw the bar. We said, okay, you want to use Active Directory, Windows Azure Active Directory. The way in which you do that is simply by using HTTP and the REST approach. And it was our base. Then here comes the other interesting thing. Classic Active Directory is something that you run, something for which you literally have bits on your own premises. You have your own administrator, and he has full power over that. Now, as we move to, and have this projection on the cloud, Microsoft manages the pipes of that. We literally manage the plumbing. However, the real owner of this is you. Like, you have your own directory, you manage your own directory, and somehow what you do in your directory is reflected on the other side. And like every multi-tenant system, it is very, very important that your experience is that you are the only user of the system. Like, it doesn't, you shouldn't care that somebody else is using this. And that holds both for the experience, but of course also for the security. We need to ensure that there is a very, very tight adiabatic, I like to say, isolation between tenants, so that there is no cross-pollination between those two. So again, this is a very important point. Microsoft does not run this directory for you. Microsoft gives you the plumbing and gives you all the machinery that will do transparent replications and similar. But you are the owner of this. You run it in your terms. And then finally, of course, before I said pretty mind-boggling numbers, most numbers have requirements. As you guys know, authentication is on the critical path of everything. No token, no party. You need to authenticate for getting to your resources. So this thing has to be absolutely available, has to deliver consistent performance, no matter if you have 10 million, 100 million users. This thing has just to work. And here, there is no magic sauce, unfortunately. Here is good engineering. And here, our one of our distinguished engineers have an aphorism that we really like, which basically sounds like what's easy on-premise is hard in the cloud. What's hard on-premise is impossible in the cloud. Because simply when you're dealing with those kind of numbers, your only defense is to keep things simple. So that's what we are doing. We are keeping things super simple. And so far, I'd say that we are faring pretty well. All right. So now we are approaching the point in which, unfortunately, we might actually need the internet. For sure, and I apologize, like, I don't have a B plan because basically, since here we are talking about taking advantage of multiple internet services, simulating them in a local machine, like if that would be possible, then probably we wouldn't have bothered to create services, right? So now I'm going to hit the Windows D. Internet access. I'm putting my hopes up. I might have to do the interpretive dance. Trust me, you don't want to see that. Okay, so let's keep going with some slider, and I'll start speaking very slowly so that I will give more time to our mighty technical team to fix. I'm sorry, I have going up and down. So, how many of you guys are familiar with LDAP? Fantastic. Okay. LDAP is a fine system, works great when you have like tight coupling, when you can assign usernames and passwords and similar, but it was never designed to be used on a multi-tenant system in the cloud. It just wasn't. And instead, faithful to the principles that we laid down earlier, we offer you the possibility of accessing your directory data using a very, very simple REST-based API, which we call the Directory Graph API. Now, this thing is based on REST. How many of you are familiar with REST programming? Some, great. For everybody else, REST is the acronym for Representational State Transfer, which is like a very nice-sounding term that just says, treat everything as a resource and use the HTTP verbs for manipulating that resource. So in the classic RPC world, you define resources and you define the operations that you can do with that, like the classic, I have like something.subscribe, and subscribe is the verb which says I'm creating the subscription. This is a fine system, but it's hard when you get to loosely coupled systems because you basically have to learn all the verbs every time, because you can't assume in advance what you can do with a certain resource. Now, with REST, the interesting thing is that you always know what you can do. Since you deal with resources without really specifying more about it, all you can do is creating those resources, deleting those resources, updating those resources, and that's it. So, for example, the thing that I said before, the verb subscribe, becomes I have a resource called subscription, and I can create it, I can delete it, I can update it. So at that point, I dramatically simplify everything. And if I go one level farther in the making this concrete, if I use HTTP, HTTP happens to have a number of those verbs already there. So basically that means that if I do this system, then any client is already capable of dealing with the information that I'm offering. I know it's a bit abstract, but hey, I have to by time, as I said. So substantially, we created an endpoint, and we created a hierarchy for building endpoints depending on the tenant that is connecting to that. And we took the classic entities that you want to manipulate when we are talking about a directory, so users, groups, roles, and we made it available as resources. And I'll show you in a moment how the syntax looks like. It's stupidly easy. And then, why are we calling this graph? We are calling this graph because one very important component of all these is making very explicit the relationships between those elements so that you can actually start from one entry point and then navigate through that. So I can get one employee, I can get his reports if he's a manager, or I can see who he reports to, or I can find all the groups that he belongs to, all these kind of things. So I start from one element, and then I just navigate the graph. And if you have experience of developing with Facebook, the idea is reasonably similar. Like, the idea of graph, of course, existed before that, but that's the most common concrete implementation you might have dealt with. Now, the interesting thing is not just that the way in which you connect to this thing is easy, but also the way in which we represent objects is very, very easy as well. How many of you guys are familiar with the term JSON? Great, big part of it. JSON is simply the way in which in JavaScript you represent a literal for one class. If you want to define one class in JavaScript, and one instance of one class in terms of the values, you just basically write it in terms of like the elements, like the members, or if you have list in terms of arrays and similar. And the way in which you write down the constants in the programming language happens to be also a great way of serializing those objects.
It's up in a lot of places, so if you want to try it.
Let me try this again. I'm sorry for the, but yeah, here it looked like it taunted me, but slowly, 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 slowly.
Come in seconds.
Ah, better luck another time. And again, I apologize, but hey, if we don't smile a bit about this. Yep. So JSON is a super, super easy way, not just of representing things in the language, but it emerged as pretty much the de facto standard for serializing things on the network. So the system that we are using represents all the objects in JSON format. Actually, you can choose between XML and JSON, and the reason is that we are basing ourselves on OData. OData is a set of open standards which enhances the REST standards with some extra capabilities like metadata or a query language. And you can use this query language for a lot of interesting things. One is determining if you want to use JSON or if you want to use XML. And the other is doing things like crafting queries so that you don't need to get from the server, like, for example, an incredibly long list and then just going through it and filtering it on the client, which is what typically happens when you do REST, because the REST is very powerful, but it does not always offer the level of granularity that you might like. And instead here with these queries, you can literally craft the filters. You can decide to have only a subset of a data field of a certain object. So substantially, you can really save a lot of cycles. You can save a lot of bandwidth by using this. But it doesn't really add anything proprietary. This is just like a bit of paint on top of REST. And you are free to ignore it. Let's say that if you don't add any of the OData syntax, it will work just as well. Okay, I'm sure it comes as no surprise to anyone that the way in which we secure an REST API is through OAuth. OAuth is, actually, how many of you guys are familiar with the term OAuth? And here it's typically, like, my pronunciation is an obstacle. So when I say OAuth, what I mean is this. So let me ask you again. How many of you are familiar with OAuth? And I do see a couple of extra hands. Again, I apologize for my brawl. Using OAuth gives us a lot of advantages, because here, substantially, we can pretty much use the power of issuing tokens for deciding who has access to what in which terms, which is substantially different from the classic here, get the username and password of LDAP, and then that's basically the keys of a realm. Instead of here, we can be very fine-grained. We can do things like updating things automatically. We can be very specific in the scope of the things that you can actually play with. So it is very, very, very powerful. Also, it's simple, and that doesn't hurt. So now here I have Slideware that can show you how to query this. I was actually planning to open a browser and show you how easy it is to just change the...
Everyone around you has it.
Well, you know, I'm Italian, I have long hair, so of course you're discriminating me, right? Down the hippies.
One more time.
Con te partirò. Internet access. Yeah, right. You know what? Let's do something radical. I extracted it. And now let's wait for a few seconds. Actually, is it the cable or is it the Wi-Fi that is back? Both. So let's try Wi-Fi. Hey, what do I have to lose? Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi. No internet access. Let's troubleshoot problems. It's not that I have nobody waiting for me, right? I have all the time in the world. Yeah. Looking for problems in web connectivity, remote host connectivity. And to think that I had such fantastic demos. Now I'm gambling, because if the internet comes back, now I'm setting your expectations. But then again, I don't think that there is a risk of that. Remote host availability. Yeah, it works on my machine. I'm familiar with a trick. I use it myself, but doesn't work with me. Your computer appears to be correctly configured, but the device is not responding. Let me try the cable again. And let's turn off the Wi-Fi. Cable, cable, cable. Hey, the cable is in. It's blinking. I'm just telling you so you don't get too bored. No, well, try. It claims that there is nothing. Well, I'll trust the ROS, and I'll just try. Nope. It doesn't even detect that there is this thing. You know, I might try to reboot. You think... It's here. Yeah, that's also. Okay, so for the time being, let's just go with a slide where even if I feel like dirt by showing slides instead of doing a demo. Now, I already gave away my only book here. Otherwise, this would have been a good question for. Can somebody tell me? What do you think that query will give me?
Details about the user at.
Fantastic. Details about the user ad, which, by the way, is a good friend of ours. He's the PM that owns the directory graph. You are exactly right. So here what we have is the following. There is a first part on this, which is the directory. This one is the service. It's the same for everyone. That's basically the root. Then here, clearly, I work for contoso.com, which if the internet keeps being down, that's probably my next employer. Because, of course, it's my fault. I remember, long hair, Italian. So here, I scoped down to my tenant. This part is already what requires me to authenticate. Like, until I was just in the generic part, anybody, so public area. But now that I'm going to contoso.com, I'll be required to provide an authentication token using OAuth. Then this part, instead, represents one of the collections that I have available. There are a number of collections, something like 7 top-level elements, like users, roles, groups, and like basically the most standard ones that you'd expect in a directory, plus a few that are specific for the cloud, such as, for example, licenses that users are being awarded. Like, yes, I can use Exchange, for example. And then this other part is one of the nice effects of using OData that I was describing earlier. So here, substantially, you get to filter your list of elements against their primary key. There is actually one key that is being used for identifying my elements. And if I use that syntax, I can go 0 straight on add. And here, there's the result formatted for your screens. This is the famous JSON that I was talking about, in which we have one element, which is the directory, which contains, in this case, a collection of name-value pairs. So, for example, there is the user, like the first one is the user in the directory, which happens to be ads manager. Member of, and here there will be the list or the pointer to the list of all the groups that Ed belongs to. And then various other things, some, how to say, infrastructural, some more, how to say, human readable. But you get the point. And finding a device which is capable of deserializing this thing is very easy. Any browser, any device with a browser can do it. And also, like, on the programming stack, it's super easy to pull this stuff out. And even if it's like a human operator, yeah, it's a bit crowded, but it's not hard to read what this thing says. So it's very, very straightforward. And here, again, if I have the internet, I'll show you, but you can do things like, also, if I'd be able to write, that would help. That thing means manager. So if I do manager and I hit enter, then here I would basically get the expansion of these. In other words, I would get all the same data that you are seeing here, but for that specific user. So I can use this thing for navigating my infrastructure. But hey, I'm an optimist, so. Let's do this again. Nope. You know what? I have an SSD. I am really tempted to reboot. I'm very, very tempted. Also, because after this one, there was a, if you'll see a little tear, don't mind me, there would have been a demo of one web application which is running in Windows Azure, hence unreachable, and which basically shows how a multi-tenant system might allow you to sign in using Windows Azure Active Directory, which for the time being is still branded as Office 365, but will work to make it more generic. And this application, being an expense note application, help you to actually would demonstrate using these APIs for obtaining information about the current user. So for example, you sign in, and here is the interpretive dense part. You sign in as a certain user, you submit a certain expense note, the system uses the graph for finding out who is the manager of a current user and what is the email of a current manager so that you can send the specific parts. And like all these kind of things that you'd fully expect from an application that runs on-premise that are exceedingly difficult when instead you're running in the cloud because the directory is not accessible, but that, however, are very easy to do with this. Yep. Yeah, but I am, well, I do have an SSD, so it might not take as long as one might expect. But, you know what, let's keep also there. Yeah, right. So actually, let's just do a little reboot. And then, you know what, while it reboots, I will take your questions. Let's be unconventional. All right. Does anybody want? Thank you. Thank you so much for being here.
Question about this synchronization process. So is it done, say, built into Active Directory 2012, so you don't have to think about it? And is it done differentially in such things? Can you elaborate a little bit on the details?
My question is, DireSync, how does that work? Exactly. There is one entire session in it, and I believe that Ross is going to deliver that, so he's going to be fantastic. But just for giving you a couple of hints, it's not built in the directory. It is one daemon which you install when you get Windows Azure Active Directory. So basically, the experience today is that when you sign up for Office 365, which is basically the main concrete instance of Windows Azure Active Directory, as part of a package, if you elect to use your own on-prem directory, then as a part of a process in which you install PowerShell commandlets, which allow you to manage your things, an sign-in assistant, which helps you to sign in for rich clients and similar, you also get this Windows service. It's a daemon that from the moment in which you install it, it starts going. And basically, it will do one first big synchronization. And then I do believe it is differential. Let's say that as soon as you add one user, the daemon says, what's happening? Something has changed. Goes on your directory, retrieves the info, and just shove it up. Great. Yes, sir. The question is, if I delete one user on my local directory, is it gone from the cloud as well? The answer is absolutely yes. Like the synchronization goes from on-premise and ascends straight to the cloud. So the idea is that you don't have two directories to manage. You manage your usual directory, and we take care of reflecting the right thing. Yes. And it also synchronizes delete events.
Is it possible to do some customization there?
It is not possible. It's the question is it possible to customize the synchronization? And the answer is, unfortunately, no. We can't do that yet.
Let me just take in short question. Does it support multi-tenancy? If you have a different customer using the on-premise security, does it support multi-tenancy?
It does, the question is, does this support multi-tenancy? It supports that at the tenant level. Let's say that once you are a tenant, that's it. There is no further granularity. And, believe it or not, content. Thank you. We have the internet. So, with this fantastic new, I believe, technology, I can now, Now let me snap back into serious, semi-serious mood. So as I already abundantly, I already stole my own thunder, what we have in here is one sample application, and you are going to get all the source code for this app once we launch, which is hopefully very soon our preview. And this application is an MVC-free app. It is based on C#, but it could be just as well based on Java and PHP. And if the internet sustains us, I'll actually show you. And basically, it does what I just said. It shows that we can take advantage of a federation for the sheer sign-in part, and it shows how it can take advantage of a graph, as I mentioned earlier. So let's do it. So let's say that I want to sign in as the tenant admin. So here, when I click the sign in, of course, I lost all the other processes. Yep. So this application is meant to be a multi-tenant application. So let's say it's an ISV, which is selling potentially to different organizations. And in this specific case, the way in which we are solving the home realm discovery problem, in other words, the ISV wants to know who you are before it can actually direct you to the right place to sign in, we are solving it using the famous NASCAR technique. That comes from the NASCAR car races that are very popular in the States. I'm not sure how popular they are in here. But anyway, imagine one race car completely covered by a tapestry of stickers, of, I would say, sponsor stickers. And here we use this term for indicating the pattern in which when you have multiple choices of identity providers for your customer, you just lay them down all in there. This is just a demo, and this is the brute force approach. Of course, there are other approaches, like we could prompt for the email of the user. And once the user types the email, we associate that to the correct organization so that they don't have to see all that. Or we could do things like the administrator that buys this app might inject directly in the query, string of the application directly his own domain so that the application doesn't have to ask you. It will send you in the right place. This is just like for giving you an idea. So here, let's just pick our test tenant. And as you will see, this thing basically will bounce me back to the authentication part, which is still branded Office 365. Don't tell me that the magic is already over. It was nice while it lasted. But... You know what? Let's see. One has internet access, show net local, but not MSAPT net. So if I do this, so that I eliminate the ambiguity, yep. I'm sorry? Yes, it was fun while it lasted. Instead of blubbering, I should have just gone through the demo and saying, keep it in memory, and then I'll annotate it later. But hey, I think that here science did everything that was possible, but the patient has died. So let's go back to where we were. Yep, it's all good. Okay, so instead of wasting time on demos, why do we need them anyway? Let's just see behind the scenes how things work. So imagine that you are the ISV, and you are the ISV that bought that fantastic application that will never sell because there is no internet. And you want to make this application available for customers of Windows Azure Active Directory, which is a very fine thing because, as I mentioned earlier, we already have a lot of customers on Windows Azure Active Directory. It's basically everybody who is already on Office 365. And so that means for an ISV, an enormous population of users of a good kind because they are businesses, so they have money to spend. So this is a very interesting proposition. So basically, let's say that you have your cloud application, you have your profile store. You might have noticed that before it was account and profile store. Now that there is the directory, you don't need accounts, but you might still want to have a profile store. In other words, the fact that there is a directory doesn't necessarily mean that you have to overload it with everything. Like if you have your application that performs a specific business function, and you have things that are making sense only for that application, say that you are selling books, you want to remember the last 10 books that the user bought, you don't necessarily want to extend the directory schema and put there the 10 books. You might just want to keep it in your own local profile like you are doing today, and you'll just use a unique identifier that you'll get for the user. You can get it from the token, you can get it from the directory, and just use it for referencing that part. Also, because as things are today, you cannot extend the directory schema. So this is actually one part for which we are seeking for feedback from you guys. How important is it for you that the directory schema itself is extensible? Because the thing that I just described, actually, even if there would be extensibility, you wouldn't probably do it. Because again, the effect is local to the application. But how often do you foresee that you'll need to have attributes that you use across multiple apps that are custom? You guys let us know. But anyway, how do we actually use, how do we set up this application in Windows Azure Active Directory? Say that now you are a potential customer, Contoso. And here you have your Windows Azure Active Directory instance. Now, being this a directory, of course, what do you have in directories? You have principles. So for example, here you could have your user principle, and user principle might be in groups. Like this is a directory, as usual. Now, in order to describe the cloud application, we also have a principle. But instead of calling it a user principle, it is what we call a service principle. So what happens is that you have an authorized user for par condicio. Let's make it a lady for once. Who's, and here I don't say administrator. I say authorized user because you don't necessarily need to be an administrator to have those capabilities. We wanted to enable you as much as possible to delegate these kind of functions. And this user is empowered with the privilege of creating service principles. So here, the user basically creates a service principle, which is a projection, a principle for that application. Now, how does that happen? But that can happen in multiple ways. For example, they authorize the user might land on a portal, on a management portal of a tenant, and they might provide some of the coordinates of this app. And the result might be creating this principle. Or the authorized user might have PowerShell commands, and she might just type the necessary parts and just hit enter. In fact, it's perfectly possible that the ISV itself might provide the PowerShell script, since it would contain already the coordinates for the applications. Or if we really want to dream big, you can imagine a marketplace, for example, in which the sheer act of buying the application, like the administrator this time, lands on this portal and buys the application, one of the effects might be the creation of this principle. Principle that is very similar to the one that you have for users. It just has its own credentials, its attributes, and can also be assigned roles. For example, you can say here, this principle has read privileges on my directory, so that this application can actually access my directory information. Useful. Okay, so I need to copy some of this stuff, otherwise we'd have to write it again. And let's see actually how you get to use this thing. So instead of authorized user, end user. Okay, can anybody guess what we would do here for authenticating to the application?
Claims-based authentication.
It's always a safe bet. And that's exactly right. In our directory, we have one endpoint for user authentication that the user can access, go through whatever ceremony the directory requires. If I had the internet, I would have shown you, but I don't. And the result of this is a user token. User token that will be happily spent with the application. And then at that point, you'll just get back a session in the most classic fashion. Now here you might notice that I'm not speaking about redirects, I'm not speaking about browser. This is a absolutely abstract flow. You can imagine this user to access that application using a browser, using a rich client, using a mobile device, using whatever is capable of spitting out HTTP. So you can apply these pretty much to anything. And then let's go to the interesting stuff. Not that this one wasn't, but, well, you tell me. Okay, and now let's actually see what happens when the user, when the application wants to take access of a directory. So what we have in here is the session. And now the application needs, for example, to know who the manager of a current user is. So what happens is that we have another endpoint, which we call delegated authentication. And this time I'll give you a bit more concrete indications. That's based on auth. And what happens is that here the application will reach out, for example, using the principal credentials, and we'll get back a delegated token. And then we have the famous REST endpoint, and now the application can access that by presenting a token. That's important because, of course, only the tenant can access its own information, And as a result, it will get back the graph information that it asked for. So very easy, very straightforward. Now, the application can also go back to the profile store and retrieve whatever was saved locally. As I mentioned these earlier, this can be done both because enough information was already available in this token. Like, I might already get whatever key I will need for my store, but it's perfectly possible that I'd have to go for this guy. Now, let me just give another go. Great. So now, without further ado, let me speak really, really fast. Now, OK, I'm signing in as this tenant. I already explained earlier what that means. And as I mentioned, here it's still based on Office 365. Let me sign in as admin. And since I'm an admin, I will be able to see a number of things that others don't see in this UI, like, for example, this ability of adding users to the application. Because since now I have a chance of querying directly the directory, I can now pull out users and assign them. This is another interesting aspect of using the directory, and I'm really torn if I should say it or if I should just go on, but I have to say it. When you do a federation, all you are saying is all the tokens coming from that authority are valid. But when you are running a business, that's not necessarily reflecting what you want, because you might be allocating resources per user, so you might want to authorize specific users. So without the chance of going into the directory and doing all the various things with the users, well, you don't have all the info that you need. And here, you do, because I can actually enable people by hand by accessing the app. Great. And here, as you can see, I have my list of my various users. So great. So let me actually sign out. It doesn't really work. Don't tell anybody. So I have to close. So let's try to sign in this time as one employee. Different ID. Now I will see a slightly different UI. In fact, I'm not an admin. What I can do is create expense reports. So let me create a new expense report, create a new invoice, reason. I don't know if I spelled it correctly. Profigality. I'm creating an expense report, and the system behind the scenes, invoice, reason, submit. Okay. Should be all fine. Great. Perfect. Now that I created that, I can go and submit it. And as you can see here, the system found out that the manager of John Adams is James Madison. And guess what it used to find out? The directory, of course. Let's see if begging works. It usually doesn't. So let's, now you guessed it. We now want to sign in as the manager. Sign in, usual tenant. Sign in with a different user ID. And you want to be Madison. And slowly, slowly. But not as slowly as before, so that's not bad. Here, as you can see, I have an extra tab. And here I have the thing that was just sent. So substantially here in this application, which is running fully in the cloud, and the proof is that until now we weren't able to access it, I was able to embed in this application all the capabilities that you would expect from a business app, like the expense notice, the quintessential level of business application. And I assure you that I didn't need to do anything unnatural, like uploading CSVs and similar. Now, I'm torn between showing you another quick demo or going on with the slideware. I have 9 minutes and 40 seconds. So let's go. Like, how many of you want to see the graph API in action? 1, 2, 3, 4. It's actually less than half. So I'll bring the computer with me. At 2 p.m., I will be at the MS Press booth. So you guys come over. I can show you. And let me get back to the very important messages from my sponsor. As we said, we absolutely want to be super simple, but what does that mean? This is the list of the protocols that you use for connecting to Windows Azure Active Directory, or in general, the protocols that we consider strategic for this effort. The first one, of course, is the one that we've been discussing until now. In order to hit our Graph API endpoints, you use REST. REST with its various variations, like OData and similar. The way in which you secure it is through OAuth, and specifically is OAuth and the JWT token, or JWT token, which stands for JSON Web Token. As you might guess from the name, this is one security token format fully based on JSON. It is a token, so it is cryptographically signed, so it's not like as easy as the thing that I had just shown, but it is still orders of magnitude easier than manipulating the current currency for authentication, which is the SAML token. I don't know if you ever tried to code deserializing and verifying a SAML token by hand. If you did, probably your social life is not especially rich. I can tell that by direct experience because I did do that back in 2002, and look at me now. So it's like you need to do all sorts of weird things. Like even before getting to crypto, you have to deal with canonicalization, which is difficult even to pronounce. And implementing it is really complicated. Instead with JSON, potentially one weekend and you're on your way. But it's usually not necessary because there are libraries that help you with that. But if you really want to, you can. Then here in the list, you see OpenID Connect. But before getting to that, let's look at SAML and AWS Federation. Now, we know that a lot of organizations today are based on the SAML protocol. A lot of applications and ISV products are based on the SAML protocol. So, of course, we want it to be compatible with the SAML protocol for the sign-in part. And the same goes for AWS Federation. Today, if you build federated or claims-based identity systems on the Microsoft platform, if you write applications using Windows Identity Foundation, that's the default. A lot of people don't even know that they are using AWS Federation. They just say, add STS reference, and stuff works. So we've got to maintain compatibility with that as well. However, for the same account that I said earlier, those protocols are not protocols that you can deal with without libraries, simply because they are too complicated. So we'd like to move to simpler grounds, also the sign-in process, which is why we are very, very interested in experimenting with OpenID Connect. OpenID Connect is a new protocol which is layered on top of OAuth 2, and substantially it implements sign-in. And it also uses JSON tokens that are very simple. So the promise is to be able to do single sign-on using a protocol that actually does not force you to use a library that decouples you from the complexity of a protocol in itself. Now, we don't know yet if that's what will give us that, but we are experimenting and it is very, very promising. So we are going in that direction. Now, here I have a few scenarios just for giving you a feeling of what we'd like to get feedback from you. One classic scenario here is we have an enterprise Viz Enterprise has a portfolio of applications on premises. They want to extend those that portfolio to the cloud. And the idea is that the Windows Azure Active Directory should allow that enterprise to take advantage of what they already have done in terms of investment on-premise directly in the cloud. Whereas for the on-premise apps, you'd just keep using your local directory. That's one area where I believe that will bring a lot of value. The other is a small business, a bit what I described earlier, like a company that does not need the workloads that are solved by the on-premise Active Directory, hence does not have it, but they still want to take advantage of cloud-based applications. In which case, having just Windows Azure Active Directory with users directly in the cloud as opposed to synchronized from on-premise is, again, one area that has a lot of potential. And in fact, a lot of customers that sign up for Office 365 are in that condition. Like, if you want to have Office 365, you don't need to have a local directory. You also have the option to have users entirely in the cloud. Then for what concerns developer scenarios, like on the ISV side of the house, here the idea is that if you already have one existing application that you're already selling as a service, then the fact that we have now these generic purpose directory in the cloud allows you to extend the reach of your application. So if you configure that to support single sign-on with Windows Azure Active Directory, which you do through classic federation, and accessing the directory, then all of a sudden you increase the reach of your app to all the current customers of Office 365 and all the future customers of Windows Azure Active Directory. Since establishing federation is not always a walk in the park, the fact that you can actually leverage the fact that somebody already set this up with somebody else, and potentially it could be, like, I'm not promising this, but potentially it could just be a check box somewhere which says, yes, I want to get access to the app, and you just leverage what you already did for establishing a federation, well, very interesting. It really lowers the price of adopting your application. Or if you are somebody who is writing something from scratch, you might consider, instead of writing your own identity service, to take advantage directly of your own Active Directory instance. And together with that, you also get all the capabilities that we already have in market. Then Windows Azure Access Control Service is part of Windows Azure Active Directory. So all the capabilities like signing on with Facebook, with social providers and similar, they are all there. So you can substantially completely outsource the problem of identity management and be merry. As I mentioned, very, very soon, we are going to show you Windows Azure Active Directory in practice. We are going to give you a set of samples. We are going to give you walkthroughs. We are going to give you a chance of getting your hands dirty with all the things that I've been describing. Now, since this is a preview, there will be some limitations. Like, for example, for the directory graph APIs, you'll be able to do read-only for the time being. Also, in terms of delegation, will be fairly coarse. Let's say that we'll be able to allow one principal to have access or disallow it, and nothing in the middle for the time being. And we'll get more granular as we move forward. Also, the WebSSO is going to be done through WS Federation only, and again, we have samples on different platforms, so you'll be able to play with that, but we don't have the other protocols yet. They will come. And of course, for the time being, this is a preview, so you can't really use this for doing any production work. And we'll keep iterating this. Like, we are giving you this preview now. You'll play with that. You'll tell us what you like. You'll tell us what you don't like. We'll change things accordingly and bring out another preview. And we will iterate until we reach consensus that, yes, this is where we want to be. And then we'll just crystallize things and go in production. Until then, expect changes. Because, again, this thing is designed to be experimenting. And depending on the feedback, we'll change stuff. Watch for the announcement on the Windows Azure blog. Okay, so despite we have some bumps here and there, we managed to go through the session. Thank you so much for your patience on the lack of internet, but the hope is that we managed to transmit anyway the essence of this. And what is the essence of Windows Azure Active Directory? It is an extension, it is a projection of your existing directory in the cloud. It is designed specifically for meeting the needs of cloud applications, needs that are not very well met by your local instance of Active Directory. It is one new essential service that we offer as our platform as a service. It is identity as a service, as we like to define it, something that allows you to take advantage of all these identity-related services without really paying the price of a classic infrastructural aspect of it. It is a pure capability, as it is a tradition of our platform as a service offering. Our preview is coming soon. This afternoon, if you are interested in the infrastructure as a service part of the story, there is a session from Sam, can't pronounce his surname, even after many years we work together. He's a great guy, and the presentation is really good. So if you are interested in infrastructure as a service, please make time to go for his session. And instead, on Thursday, we'll have our very own Ross, that is going to go in the details of using Windows Azure Active Directory in the context of Office 365. So if you have more detailed questions about the directory, that's the right place to go. And also, if you still have a question for this, or if you want to snatch a free book on developing on Windows Identity Foundation, in about 45 minutes, I will be at the MS Press booth. So if you have other questions, we can just grab it there. Thank you so much for your patience, and don't forget to fill your evals.